depending on what corals you're keeping. You know, some of the LPS corals are going to be a little more lower flow, but some of your soft corals and some of your SPS are going to be in some tidal zones, like, you know, rushing water back and forth. Soft corals, like, depending on what kind of soft corals we're keeping, are going to be in the same conditions or super heavy currents. So you're definitely going to want to, you know, give yourself some flow in your tanks, and it's definitely more challenging with nano tanks.
What's up, reef fanatics? Welcome back to another Coral Reef Talk podcast. In today's episode, we're talking all about how to be successful when keeping coral, and we have 10 ways to do that. So today, 10 ways to be successful at keeping coral in your reef tank. Levi, how are you doing today?
Doing good. How about yourself?
I am hanging in there, doing all right. If you don't know, I skateboard here and there once in a while, and kind of slammed really hard the other day. So I'm a little bit injured, but I'm doing okay.
Ouch. No fun.
But yeah, so corals, keeping corals, how are we going to be successful when doing that? And you work with corals. That's your day job. You do that day in and day out. So just thinking about that process for somebody getting into the hobby, or maybe they've been in it for a while and they're not having much success with their corals, what is something that comes to your mind? What's like the first thing that you think about when it comes to keeping corals?
Yeah, so I mean, and it really depends on what kind of corals you're keeping as well. But if you're just getting into the hobby and you're, you know, just getting into corals and maybe you're struggling some and you don't necessarily like know what's going on, I'd always just maybe recommend taking like a water sample into your local fish store, or even testing it yourself with like a little home test kits like Hannah checkers, just to kind of see where your parameters are at, because a lot of the time that's going to be what it is. And salinity, I mean, and pH are probably some of the most important things. Yeah, you just want to really monitor your parameters and try to keep those at a regular, you know, maintained level to try to give yourself the best chance of success with corals. Because, I mean, even soft corals can be somewhat challenging. But if you're struggling with soft corals, you got some big issues, you know, going on in your tank. So definitely test your water first and kind of see where your parameters are at. And take it to a local fish store. Talk with someone that, like, knows what they're doing. They'll probably suggest, you know, try a water change or dose this or dose that. Start dosing calcium. I mean, there's just a lot of different things that could be going on to cause corals to be stressed out and, you know, dying off. But definitely, yeah, first thing, just test your tank and see what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially just starting out, testing your tank is how you're going to know what your tank is doing. And some of the main things that we test for that you mentioned, like your calcium, your alkalinity, magnesium, but keeping those things stable in your reef tank. Whenever you hear, like in the forums, or you're talking to people at your local fish store, and they're like, stability is key.
Yeah,
that's probably the number one thing. And what they're referring to with stability is all of those different parameters, as well as like your lighting and water flow and stuff like that. So stability, when it comes to lighting your reef tank, you kind of want to get your lighting set up, get the right spectrum, and then like set it and forget it, right? Like, you don't really want to mess with that light setting again. Maybe you do PAR samples, depending on like what corals you're keeping. You're going to check the different PAR intensities in your tank and make sure they're set right. And then you pretty much don't have to mess with that light. Just put it on a schedule and you're good to go.
Yeah, I mean, consistency definitely helps with corals. Like, if you are like just flipping on your light and flicking it off when, you know, whenever you feel like it, I don't think that's the proper way, you know, to like keep corals successfully and grow them properly. I mean, I'm sure you can do it that way, but I'm always like a fan of, you know, just like having it slowly ramp up in the morning and just kind of taper off in the evening, just because that's what they do in nature. Like, that's what happens. You know, you have a sunrise, a sunset. Like, they get cooked up during the day, you know, with some good sunlight. But just like, I always personally just try to mimic their environment the best that you can in your home aquarium to give yourself the best chance at success.
Yeah. And I remember when I first started, like, I didn't have the LED light that slowly like dimmed on and dimmed off. Mm-hmm. It was just the T5 bulbs, and that's fine because you're talking about consistency. So it's either on or off. So as long as they're coming on at the same time, going off, like, you're keeping that consistent schedule, then your corals are going to like that. And that's one way to be successful. So testing and lighting, and we'll jump more into the testing side of it in just a minute. But yeah, keeping your tank stable, that's one thing that we're talking about, especially lighting. Another big thing with corals, water flow. How important is water flow for corals?
That's very important, really. I mean, especially depending on what corals you're keeping. You know, some of the LPS corals are going to be a little more lower flow, but some of your soft corals and some of your SPS are going to be in some tidal zones, like, you know, rushing water back and forth. Soft corals, like, depending on what kind of soft corals we're keeping, are going to be in the same conditions or super heavy currents. So you're definitely going to want to, you know, give yourself some flow in your tanks. And it's definitely more challenging with nano tanks. And I know this from personal experience, you know, just trying to find certain things to be able to give you that amount of flow. Because I always feel like when I have a nano system, you know, it's hard to just get that right amount of flow. You either got too much because the equipment's too strong, or the equipment too weak, and it's, you know, just not giving yourself to the level that you need. But yeah, flow is definitely important, keeping like detritus from settling on your corals, and also just making your corals move like they would in the wild, just to keep them healthy and opened up. So
yeah, and water flow, it helps bring food to the coral, right? It helps the coral capture that food. It helps them get rid of waste as well. It helps with coral respiration, photosynthesis. So it's super, super important. Without getting like too like nerdy or down the rabbit trail, water flow helps bring corals food, helps them capture it, helps them remove, helps get rid of waste in your aquarium, like you're talking about, things settling, detritus, and it helps get rid of dead spots.
Absolutely.
So dead spots in your aquarium, they're just areas in your tank where water's not flowing as much. It's like a stagnant area in your tank. That's where nuisance algae can grow. Mm-hmm. That's where things can settle in your tank, and it's just overall not good because you want things suspended in your tank like you're talking about. Our next point is feeding your corals, right? So if water flow is so important that it's moving the food through your aquarium so your corals can grab it, how important is feeding your corals then? Because you hear that corals are photosynthetics. They do just fine with the lighting. How much better do they do if you're feeding them?
Yeah, so I mean, me personally, like NPS corals, you know, you're definitely gonna have to feed those a lot. But if we're just talking like, you know, photosynthetic corals, soft corals, hard corals, the LPS corals that are photosynthetic, I mean, feeding is definitely important, but it's not necessarily required, because I know a bunch of people that have tanks that they just don't feed their corals and their corals look amazing. But I've always been a big fan of feeding your corals. You know, they're obviously eating in the wild. Just try to, you know, keep up with that consistency level of just, you know, hey, feed your corals like maybe once a week or so, just to kind of give them some food. But I mean, depending on what you're keeping in your tank and stuff, you're always going to have like some kind of, you know, plankton or some food, you know, going through the water column, even as if it's just different kinds of detritus or leftover food that's been in the tank for a little bit. You know, good water flow is going to help, you know, feed your corals as well by just keeping that stuff suspended like we were talking about in the system.
Yep, for sure. And now a big thing that comes up when talking about keeping coral is different parameter swings in your tank. Mm-hmm. One main one is like alkalinity.
Yeah.
So when looking at alkalinity or testing that, what kind of number should someone first starting out, what number are they shooting for, or what range of numbers should they be in?
Yeah, so I mean, it can definitely range. You know, I know some people that have like hard corals and they try to keep their alkalinity a little higher. And I also know some people, you know, that try to aim for like, you know, 7 to 8, 8.3, you know, right in that range. So it all, like, there's different preferences, but you got to understand, like, you know, your alkalinity levels are going to affect how much calcium is being absorbed by your corals and all the other, like, they all play in with each other. So you just got to be really, you know, careful and try to monitor those levels the best that you can.
Right. Yeah. And then there's some that dose kalkwasser and bring up the pH, which affects your alkalinity as well. And then the alkalinity kind of mellows out, can be at a higher level too. So it's, again, depends on what you're keeping in your tank, like what your goals are for your aquarium. Like if you're keeping more of the calcium carbonate, the hard corals, like the LPS corals or SPS corals, even, you're probably shooting for a range between like 8 and 9, somewhere in there.
Yeah, definitely.
And then that brings us to stable calcium and magnesium. So what are we looking at with calcium and magnesium? Because like you said, they all play a part. Calcium, alkalinity, magnesium, there's a relationship there between what's happening.
Yeah. So your calcium and magnesium, I totally try to aim for like, you know, the 400 to 450 range with calcium. And you can have a little bit of a buffer zone, but you don't want to creep too much further than, you know, 450 to 500, because you're going to, you know, start to have issues in your tank as far as like calcium just kind of like practically falling from the sky in your system. I've had that happen before on some systems where your calcium gets up to like 600 and it's practically snowing in the reef. You do not want that to happen. But yeah, so I always aim, you know, for 400 to 450, right in that range. Magnesium, a little lower, like 1200. Some people keep it at like 1400. I mean, it really depends, like I said, on just kind of what you're keeping. But if you're keeping like SPS and stuff, you're going to have to, you know, be dosing more calcium to keep those levels at that level, because your corals are going to be absorbing a lot more. And even with soft corals, the corals are still absorbing calcium. Like, they're absorbing calcium, you know, all the alkalinity and such. The corals are still absorbing that. So you still got to monitor those levels. Like, you can't just have a softy tank and just expect everything to be fine forever without, you know, dosing something, because the corals, no matter what, they're still going to be absorbing some.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the beginning of having a reef tank, when talking about dosing, like dosing these elements to the water, when do you know, like a question I get often is, how do I know when to start dosing? And that's pretty much knowing what your parameters are, right? Like finding the trend and then seeing whenever those, when like your calcium alkalinity starts to change, you know that your corals are absorbing that, and then you can dose more.
Yep. Yeah. Just like I said earlier, just kind of, you know, check on your parameters, you know, check your parameters maybe once a week or something, just, you know, just to start. And, you know, I test more than that personally, but if you don't have too much time on your hands and stuff, you know, maybe try every Friday, like test your tanks, see what they're at, just to kind of give you a gauge of where things are slowly going. And I know a lot of people, and myself included, you know, that use like little apps and stuff to help track. Like, even if you don't have an Apex system or something, there's apps you can use, you know, to punch in some numbers, and it gives you like a graph, so you can kind of see what, where you're at, and like what, if you're dosing, or if what you're dosing is enough. It just kind of gives you that gauge, you know, to kind of figure out what you need to do and what to dose and how to dose it and how much to dose.
Yeah, the graphs are really helpful, because you can really see that trend line of if things are escalating too quickly, too much, or the rise and fall.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so one big thing that is a huge conversation, huge topic all across the internet is pH. How to maintain pH, what's the proper pH level, how high of a pH is too high, all of those different things. But I mean, when I first started, when I was learning all of this stuff, my tank would drop to 7.8 in the evening, and it would be around 8.0 during the day. And that's perfectly fine. A tank can survive with that 7.8 or like a low 8 number. But it's really been pretty much recommended you want that 8.3, right? How important is that 8.3 or above number?
Yeah, so it's definitely important, I would say. And I think that's definitely, especially recently, you know, with a lot of research that's being done and just kind of trends that have been going on, pH is definitely one of the more important parameters in your system. And that's simply because, you know, the pH is going to affect how your corals look, and the, like, you know, the acidity of your water. You just kind of want to keep that, like, I try to not fall below 8 if I can. I mean, it's hard because, I mean, certain systems are different, and there's a lot of factors, you know, that actually factor into pH. You're going to have, like, your photosynthesis that helps raise your pH. So when your lights are on and your corals and algae are photosynthesizing, that's going to help raise your pH. And also, like, you know, your air in your room that you have your tank in, like, that affects your pH as well. Like, I know sometimes people recommend, you know, crack open your window in your fish room or something, because it definitely helps raise the pH. And I know a lot of people that have actually, you know, like run their skimmer line like outside somehow, you know, just to suck in air from outside. That helps raise their pH. And what I personally do to help with the pH levels is, you know, have like a reverse period of like light on the system. I used to have a refugium, and I still do, but I use the algae scrubber as well. And I have the algae scrubber light kick on in the evening when the lights go out. So you still have, you know, photosynthesis going on where it's keeping your pH more stable. And most of the time my system sits during the day at like 8.2 to 8.3 in the Caribbean Reef. And it drops, you know, to about 8 and sometimes like, you know, 7.9. But it doesn't fall much below that with the algae scrubber. But I definitely notice with the, you know, this tank right behind me here, the NPS tank, the pH definitely drops a little bit more and it stays a little lower, you know, because there's not much light on it. So I'm trying to figure out a way to, you know, maybe incorporate a scrubber into that system just to try to help keep the pH on and probably have the light on most of the day. But there's all other ways you can do that as well. The water flow is probably one of the biggest thing, you know, that helps keep the pH up in the system. Right now it's probably about 8. It usually sits at about 8. I'd like to get it a little higher than that, but it's definitely a struggle, you know, without much photosynthesis going on in the system. But yeah, pH is definitely really important. I definitely recommend trying to keep that as stable as possible. It's hard. It really is. But there's ways, you know, you can try to help contribute to keeping that level stable.
Right. Yeah. Because it really helps your corals grow. So they can grow faster with a higher pH, keeping it above the 8.3. Yeah, that water flow that you were mentioning, also like that surface agitation, is going to help gas exchange. So it's going to get that CO2 out of there, because the more CO2 you have, it's going to drop that pH. And so that's another reason why you may have low pH, is because of all the CO2. So that's why there's the CO2 scrubbing media out there. And that's just like little tiny pellets that absorb the CO2 and then promote, like, release oxygen. So you might notice, if you test your pH often, or if you have a pH probe on your tank, you'll see like the normal rise and fall, right? During the day and during the night. But if you leave your house for like a week, you're not in your house breathing, you don't have your pets in the house, whatever, you'll notice while you're away on that graph, it's going to get higher.
It rises. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it rises because there's less CO2, more oxygen. So,
One more thing that I probably will have to incorporate into the NPS system, you know, to help keep it stable, is kalkwasser dressing. That's a pretty big thing nowadays, especially like algae scrubbers and all that sort of stuff can be quite expensive. Kalkwasser can be like a cheaper avenue to, you know, to go about without, you know, using photosynthesis. And that like kalkwasser dosing is pretty much, you know, just keeping your pH stable. You can overdose it, so you do got to be careful, but you kind of find that happy medium, you know, drip it overnight or have a specific dose or dose a certain amount like throughout the night and even sometimes during the day, you know, just to keep that level stable. And it takes time, you know, to do all the math and kind of figure out how much it's affecting your system and what, like, how much it's raising it and such. So it definitely takes time, but it's definitely worth figuring out, you know, just how much you need to dose to keep the tank at like 8.3, 8.2.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm currently doing on the 125, is I have that set up on a dosing pump. So it's dosing through the night at a certain milliliters per hour for 13 hours. And then it does that at night. And then any fluctuation in evaporation, I have the auto top off to fill in that gap too. So my tank's running at like 8.47 is what it's been at. Now, when we leave on vacation, it's up there in like 8.5, 8.56, whatever. But yeah, the tank's just fine.
It's crazy how much that affects, you know, like the tanks, like just you being inside and just breathing and stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. That affects it.
It's just insane.
Yeah, I'll have to pull up a graph or something. Maybe I can put that in this episode, or if I find a graph, I'll put a post of how much it rises when we're not in the house. But yeah. pH is definitely a big thing to keep stable, get under control, and shoot for that 8.3 or above, because we don't want our tanks just surviving. We want them thriving.
Right. Absolutely. For sure.
So, but then another thing to test for or to look out for is nitrates and phosphates, right? So you don't want those at zero. Basically, you need some nitrates and phosphates, because you need that. That's how life happens, right? The nitrogen, the phosphorus, that's how your corals use that to grow too. So you don't need that at zero in your tank.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's quite important. You know, the nitrogen cycle, how it works. You start out with like some ammonia, works its way to nitrite, and then you get your nitrates towards like at the end of the cycle. And usually over time, your nitrates will slowly build in your system. Because there's not really much of anything removing them. I mean, you can use like algae scrubbers, water changes, obviously. But even with like your refugiums and your algae scrubbers, you're still going to probably end up having to do water changes because your nitrates are still going to build faster than what most of those can remove them. But I know quite a bit of people, myself included, that do pretty well with like the algae scrubber and stuff. It keeps the nutrients really low. But I do feed quite heavily, so it does slowly build up, but not as fast as like what it would like if like a normal person was feeding normal amounts of food, you know. But yeah, I mean, those can definitely help, you know, maintain those a little longer. But in the long run, you're gonna pretty much end up doing water changes, you know, to replenish your levels and just your water quality. And then as far as phosphate, the same thing, pretty much. Just you want to try to keep that as more on the super low end, you know, because too much can definitely be detrimental to like algae levels, like breaking out in your tank and just all over your glass and algae blooms. And I mean, it can create pretty much chaos. It can just cause issues and just, you know, your brain spinning like, man, I can't do this anymore. So yeah, algae scrubbers, refugiums, water changes. I mean, that all helps, you know, keep those levels down. Just like I said, maybe test your tank once a week. Just kind of see where it's going and watch your levels trend up or trend down. Yeah. I mean, there's ways to remove nutrients without doing water changes, but it always still comes back to it's time for a water change because you'll start to notice your corals, you know.
Yeah.
Looking a little off.
And one thing I like about water changes is you always notice a big difference. Like as soon as you do a water change, the tank just looks amazing right after.
Corals fluff up bigger and like your fish look a little happier. Like it's just like a refreshment, like just refreshing the tank.
Yeah. And so I definitely recommend if you're brand new to the hobby and you just set up your first tank, you're adding corals to the tank and you're testing these parameters, definitely keep on the water change schedule, definitely in the beginning, because that's going to help you learn what is going on in your tank a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Now, if you miss a week, that's fine. But I mean, be consistent with it. The more consistent you are with testing, with water changes, with all of these things that we're talking about, you're definitely going to have huge success.
Absolutely.
Keeping a reef tank. But yeah, removing contaminants and stuff from your reef tank using water changes like you're talking about. You can use carbon too, that can absorb something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, all of those things will help you become a more successful reef keeper. And that's one of the goals that we have here at the Coral Reef Talk, is to help you become a more successful reef keeper. If you're liking this podcast, go ahead and leave a comment down below and let us know maybe what you're struggling with, what you need help with, and we'll definitely jump in there and help you out. But Levi, do you know about our sponsor, Printed Reef?
Yes, I do.
Printed Reef makes incredible 3D printed products out of 100% reef-safe PETG plastic, like this right here. This is a bristle worm trap. You can put that in there to help attract bristle worms to it. You can get those things out of your tank if you want to, or if you have some scolemia, some scullies, you got a scully stand right here.
Awesome. So
they just make awesome, unique products. I mean, what do you think about Printed Reef?
Yeah, Printed Reef is pretty amazing. I got a couple of their products I use, especially like for like the Gorgonians. Like I like to, you know, stick them in the sand or mount them on rocks. But they have certain mounts, you know, where you can just mount it to it and it helps hold it up in the sand. And I mean, I love them. They have a lot of different products too, and they're amazing.
Yeah, so head on over to printedreef.com. And if you're a subscriber to the Coral Reef Talk, you can save 10% at printedreef.com/thecoralreeftalk. Just use the code The Coral Reef Talk at checkout. So pretty awesome. Now, Levi, we talked in one episode, we talked about Fiji corals, right?
Yes.
And you wanted to share something today about Fiji corals.
Yeah. So at my work, we got our first Fiji coral shipment. I was pretty excited to see how they came in. It came in a little rough, but you know, that always happens with certain shipments. You get a rough shipment. So there's a little bit of dead, but other than that, a lot of the corals look pretty good. Fiji's different, you know, you don't get all the corals you'd think of. You get some nice acros, some really unique calastria like the trumpets, but they're also really known for their yellow Fiji leathers. So they're not the greatest shippers. So you're like, especially if you're importing a bunch of them, you're going to have a few, you know, that don't make it, you know, that arrive in rough shape. Yeah. And you know, as you know, toadstools and leathers in general are dirty. Like they're just like, you stick them in the bag for, you think like 2 days, like you're going to have some that, you know, that just don't make it, like that crap out and just release toxins and stuff into the water. But yeah, I mean, it arrived pretty well. We have some yellow Fiji leathers that are really cool.
Okay.
Super excited to finally, you know, have those back in the hobby, because Fiji's, you know, one of those classic places where a lot of like the crazy cool, like classic corals that are in the hobby, like that's where a lot of them actually came from. Like, believe it or not, like your classic Fiji leathers, even a lot of your acros and stuff, like Fiji is where a lot of the high end, you know, nice quality frags and stuff are from originally. But yeah, Fiji's been down for 10 years and it just now opened back up. So I'm super excited, you know, just to kind of continue seeing what's coming out of Fiji. There's a lot of people starting to get the shipments finally. So it should be cool, you know, to add to the diversity that we have in the aquarium trade right now by adding another country to that. So, and then Solomon Islands now is actually exporting too. So a few wholesalers are starting to get Solomon Island stuff too. So, I mean, it's pretty cool seeing some new, you know, diversity kind of trickle its way back into the aquarium trade.
Yeah, very cool, man. How many of these yellow leathers did you get?
20, maybe.
20 of them. 20
or so. And I think they're all gone except for two or three.
Okay.
So they went pretty quick, but that's yeah, people like that, the yellow Fiji leather specifically is a coral that I hear a lot of people talking about all over, like, you know, social media and on mm-hmm. podcasts and just in general, people are always like, I need the yellow Fiji leather. So one thing that is a little weird about it, cause I get a lot of people like asking for them and I'm like, you know, your tanks, you know, you run full blue lights. Like, you're not going to be able to appreciate the true yellow Fiji leather. Like, you can't see the yellow. Like, it looks green under, you know, the blue lights, which is cool, but the true yellow is you're going to get with, like, some strong light, strong flow. A lot of people even say you can't keep them yellow unless you use, like, metal halides with some true UV coming out of it. Because, I mean, a lot of, like, your true yellow corals and your bright purple corals are coming from super shallow water. So you just got to keep that in mind, too, before, you know, going and purchasing a yellow Fiji leather and throwing it in like your dimly lit softy tank. Like, you just got to keep that in mind.
And that goes back to talking about what are your plans for your tank? What type of corals do you want to keep? Mm-hmm. Right. And what do you want your tank to look like? So we touched upon at least 10 things that you can do to have success with your reef aquarium, with growing corals and success with your corals. Final thoughts on this topic. Is there anything that we missed or any other good advice that you have for someone just now adding corals to their tank, or maybe they're struggling with testing? What do you got?
Yeah. So, I mean, we probably forgot something, but I'm sure we'll figure it out. But, you know, there's forums out there and, you know, usually people are friendly. So like reach out on like your Facebook groups or something, like join a Facebook group, mm-hmm. ask questions, go to your local fish store, support your local fish store, ask them questions.
Yeah.
For the most part, and I'm going to say this, you know, meaning that not all stores are the same, but they're going to want to help you. You know, they're not just going to want to, you know, take your money and like, you know, make a bunch of money off you and just rake you into a bunch of things. Most fish stores are honest with you and want to try to help you out too, because in the long run, that's going to get them more business the right way. So yeah, just go talk to your local fish store, talk to people you might know that are in the hobby. Just be very communicating, like communicate with people. People are willing to help. Yep. So.
And talking about forums, I mean, there are a lot of people in the forums that are going to jump in and try and help you out. That's not always been my experience in the forums. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that are like pretty mean in the forums.
Yeah, just to get that out. That too.
Yeah, like you just ask a simple question and they're like, what are you doing? How do you not know this? This is how you do this. Like,
yeah,
but that's not how it is here. So if you do have those questions, you can always ask us and we will, if we don't have a direct answer, we'll point you somewhere to get you that answer, or we'll help you solve the problem ourselves. But yeah, some of the big takeaways, I mean, water flow is extremely important for gas exchange in your reef tank, for delivering food to your corals. So that's extremely important. Lighting, mm-hmm. if you're keeping the photosynthetic corals, that's extremely important as well. You don't necessarily have to go out and get a par meter or anything, because I know those can be expensive. Even if you're trying to rent one of those, they can be expensive. Mm-hmm. So if you're just starting, you don't necessarily have to do the whole par thing. You can kind of go off of the presets of some of these LED lights, or just look at your corals. If your corals are out and they're happy, they're loving the light and the water flow that you have.
I mean, that's one thing I should have mentioned. Like, you know, like your tank, it'll communicate with you too. Yeah. Like, even if you're not testing as often as you should or something, like the way your corals look is going to tell you if something's wrong or right. You know, if your parameters are like slightly elevated in a certain way and your corals still look great, like, don't panic. I mean, your corals are enjoying it, obviously, and they're doing good. So, but I mean, if your corals start to look a little off, that's when you're like, okay, like, something's up, like, let's test, let's figure this out. Like, so that definitely helps.
Yeah. And that's another reason why there's a range of numbers, right? Like, mm-hmm. all these tanks, all of our tanks are a little bit different. And so you're shooting for maybe close to these numbers, but maybe your tank's not going to sit at 9 DKH. Maybe it's going to be at 8, but all your corals look great. So yeah, your corals will tell you what they like. So, and you'll learn that over time. So just as an encouragement to you, if you're brand new to the hobby, there's a ton of stuff to learn. So always be a student.
Absolutely. That's
something that I like to say. There's always something to learn. There's mm-hmm. always something to improve on. There's always something that is going to benefit your tank, but always be a student, always be willing to learn, ask questions, and then that will drastically increase your success in keeping a coral reef tank.
I agree.
For sure. So if you've enjoyed this episode, go ahead and let us know by clicking that like button. Leave us a comment down below. What was your favorite part? And as always, thank you so much for watching. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button, and we'll see you in the next episode.
See you guys.